very magisterial book called Which Way Western Man. It's kind of become my new Bible in a way. See what you guys think of this passage. It said, the voice of God is made to speak always in behalf of the neighbor, the other man, the mass. They would thus achieve a collective strength great enough to overwhelm all superior men and either prevent their appearance or drag them down to their own level. Thus the herd virtues come to the fore. Brotherly love, for example. The ideal now is unselfishness. Let me readjust something here. The ideal now is unselfishness. One must think of others first, regardless of what happens to oneself, even to one's deepest self. The cry is, do everything for the benefit of others. To be true to oneself is evil. It might give somebody pain. Yeah, we have to be tolerant now. We can't talk about the survival of the white race and why we want to survive as a race, because we may offend people of color. Besides, it shows pride, a setting up of one's own will in defiance of God. To find life, to please God, one must bend one's neck, deny oneself, forgive all injuries, love everybody, and show by always doing good and helping others. Why? And to what end? That thus it may become ever easier, more pleasant, more secure for the kind of people who preach this doctrine. That is, for the weak, the sickly, the mediocre, in short, for the ordinary man and the mass. Very interesting. Very interesting. Okay. Let's read some things here about the U.S. mail. Once again, I am gleaning this from a Paranoid newsletter. Hope you guys are getting something out of this. I believe that the Radio Club people and the people who submit stuff to the News and Views are the sharpest people in the movement, I think. And I'm not just saying that to be an ass-kisser. I really mean that. When you see what's going on in the rest of the struggle and the same old things, I've read some of the things that you guys wrote to Tommy, the TT on the News and Views. I'm like, wow, this guy was freaking brilliant. Why isn't he doing a Ghost Wolf radio show? You know, I mean, just if you guys have access to information that you think would make a good Ghost Wolf radio show, you think it'd be a good Radio Rahoa show, it'd be good information, it would help white people to have this knowledge. So you already have the knowledge, you already read it, you have this book. Either download it, send that information. Don't send me a PDF file. I'm always having problems opening up them things. I don't know if there's a block at my library. Every time someone sends me something, I can never view photographs or anything because they're blocked out. So I'm sure if a computer man was right alongside me, maybe he can get around that stuff, but I can't. And if he talks to me over the phone and tries to talk me through it, I'm telling you, it's not going to work. I'm just not a technically savvy person. I'm a tactically savvy person. So, send that stuff to Tommy. That Swedish guy, Schleipnir, if he still hears these shows, he has access to some revolutionary manual that's pretty intense. Listen, brother, download it, put it in an envelope, and send it to Warsaw, Indiana. P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana 46581. P.O. Box, Post Office Box 401 Warsaw, WARSAW, comma, Indiana. Abbreviate that with IN. And then the zip code will be 46581. All right. Speaking of mail, let's read about comments on mailing drugs and contraband. We're not going to be mailing no drugs, are we? We don't want to get into the drug trade. We want to use this maybe for other information. Who knows? So who is better to ship with? UPS, FedEx, or USPS, United States Postal Service? To answer this question, I will give you some statistics on these courier services within the United States. The United States Postal Service delivers over 100 billion pieces of standard mail, 95 billion pieces of first-class mail, 1 billion packages, 900 million pieces of priority mail, and 54 million pieces of express mail. Internationally, the U.S. Postal Service delivers 830 million pieces of mail a year, including periodicals and other such mailings. The U.S. Postal Service handles approximately 2.13 billion pieces of mail a year. You know, it's amazing they're able to get that done, because I see a lot of laziness and incompetence at the post offices that I've been to lately. And I'm not seeing very many whites there. FedEx handles slightly under 2 billion pieces of mail total per year. UPS handles about 5.3 billion a year. That's FedEx has 2 billion, UPS has 5.3 billion, billion with a B. The U.S. Postal Service clearly handles vastly more mail than FedEx or UPS, and this means that your package has more area to blend into. If every single person in the United States inspected a piece of U.S. Postal Service every single day, under half the daily volume of USPS mail would be inspected. Let me read that again. He's saying that basically, if you ship it through the U.S. Postal Service, your package has more of a tendency of being blended in because there's just so much more mail. He says if every single person in the United States inspected a piece of mail with the post office every single day, under half the daily volume of post office mail would be inspected. The USPS handles around half as many pieces of mail internationally alone as FedEx handles worldwide. Okay. Question. Isn't it a serious crime to use the USPS to send drugs? It is a serious crime to use any mail service to send drugs. You are risking a federal felony regardless of if you are using UPS, FedEx, UPS, USPS, or DHL, or any other service. Using the Postal Service means you are less likely to have a package intercepted because there's so much more room to blend into. Are there any other reasons I should use the post office? Yes, the post office needs a warrant to open your mail. UPS and FedEx do not require a warrant to open and inspect your packages. Although law enforcement technically needs a warrant to inspect UPS and FedEx packages, in practice they do not, as UPS and FedEx will in all cases cooperate with law enforcement. The requirement of a warrant to open your package reduces the chances that your package will be intercepted. I don't find a way to get around that. Perhaps the judge doesn't think they have enough evidence to open your package. Perhaps someone who would otherwise open a package or on a whim will not open your package because they don't feel like going through the steps of getting a warrant and going to look for another package they find more likely to have contraband in it. Notice, the need for a warrant only applies in the United States. If your package leaves the country, Customs is not going to need a warrant to open it. Similarly, when a package is entering the United States, Customs may not need a warrant to open your package. I know what I will do. I will fill my package with cayenne pepper so that if a dog smells it, then he will have its sense of smell destroyed. This will not work. A dog can smell through pepper, and it is not going to destroy its sense of smell, unless maybe it rips it out and snorts it. Use vacuum sealed bags to reduce the area a dog can hit on your package. It says use vacuum sealed bags to reduce the area a dog can hit on your packaging. Typo there, or bad English, I don't know. I hear no one ever gets caught for mailing drugs. Over 1,000 people a year are arrested for mailing drugs. While it is true they are often sloppy, setting that aside. Handling bulk, anyone can get busted. The goal is to reduce risk, not pretend it isn't there. Secure shipping means packaging and mailing products in ways that minimize risk for all involved. Safe shipping is more than packaging a product to reduce risk of interception. It is also using techniques to avoid liability for the shipper and recipient of any size products. What causes a product to be red flagged? The following is a list of things Custom uses to screen some suspicious parcels. A suspicious attribute of a parcel is called a flag. A single flag is often not much of a problem, but the more flags a package has, the higher its chances that it will be intercepted. Now here's the things that tip off investigators. And it's from the official United States Postal Service package flag list. No return address. That's very suspicious. Restrictive markings such as writing personal on the envelope. What I'm about to read, I just want to reiterate, these are things that make Postal Service officials suspicious of your package. So no return address, restrictive markings like saying personal, misspelled words, poorly typed or written text, excessive postage, addressed to an incorrect title, sent from a foreign country, sealed with tape. Interesting. I have a habit of sending my stuff sealed with tape all the time just because I don't trust the envelope flap. Interesting. Emits a strange odor, including masking agents such as coffee, perfume, fabric softener sheets. Lopsided, uneven, rigid, bulky, or otherwise uneven weight distribution. Oil stains, discolorations and crystallizations on packaging. A packaging appears to be reused. Package looks generally poorly prepared for shipping. Addresses are handwritten. Addresses contain misspelled information such as names, streets, or cities. Originate from a drug source state, you know, like if something's coming from Colombia. Are addressed as being sent from an individual to an individual. What? Are addressed as being sent from an individual to an individual. What's wrong with that? I don't know about that one. Return address zip code does not match zip code of the post office the package is being sent from. A fictitious return address is used. Well, like what I read in that show yesterday, you can use it as someone send something to you, like when talking about the reloadable debit cards. You can have that mail or whatever shipped to an abandoned house. Just make sure the abandoned house doesn't look abandoned and just monitor that mail. That would work. List a sender or receiver name of a common type, such as John Smith. Something that's real. If something's mentioned or mail from John Smith, people tend to get a little suspicious, even though there aren't people named that. Make use of names that are not connected to either address. Package makes noise when shaken. Redistribution of weight is felt when package is moved or tilted. Okay. Let me stop here. Now let's talk about packaging here. Do not attempt to use masking scents. They are completely worthless against dogs and are a flag to humans. Double vacuum seal the substance, comma, attempting to spread substance out as thinly and evenly as possible. One method for particularly smelly or sensitive items is to vacuum seal them once, then change gloves to clean pair. You can use tight-fitting driving gloves or simply change a pair of latex gloves over the top of them. Then scrub the outside of the vacuum bag with a light bleach solution. Then vacuum seal the seal bag after it dries fully. double vacuum seal. Ensure that there is no remaining smell of bleach escaping from the bag. Sounds like a lot of work. I don't know how this applies to us. Using super glue or spray adhesive, secure vacuum sealed bag to a piece of construction paper. Make sure it is secured tightly and that product does not make noises when shaken. Tape should generally be avoided as it tends to have significant weight, especially to smaller orders, and be harder to get a solid stick with. Make sure if you use spray adhesive to be careful not to get dust and such stuck that could be forensically analyzed. Come on, dudes. Type this a little bit better. Although this is unlikely to be a huge issue, and anything sticky will leave trace amounts of dust. Okay. Fold the construction paper over on itself to make it take up as little area as possible, yet still accommodating for a vacuum sealed bag. If the thicker cardboard priority envelopes are available, first envelope should be inserted into one of these. Both envelopes should be addressed. At all stages of packaging, gloves should be worn. Latex gloves should not be used by themselves. They are so thin that if any debris, including dust, gets on them, you will leave debris impressions of your fingerprints on what you touch, similar to a rubber stamp. Oh, okay. You know, I heard this in a CSI episode one time. Oh, the killer was smart. He didn't use the thin latex gloves. He knows he can leave prints. So I guess if a latex glove is too thick or too thin, you won't leave your fingerprints with the amino acids in the oil in your skin. You leave your fingerprints in dust that can be picked up. Now I get it. Now I understand what he was talking about. Like I said before, there's a lot of mechanics, I don't know about in your area, but I know in my area, a lot of mechanics are going to these black latex gloves that the funeral home people use. They're real thick. People who use those type of black gloves, you know, use it for handling dead bodies and like maybe cleaning up debris from a decomposed corpse or something like that. But I know mechanics are using them. So, interesting. Okay, latex gloves should be worn over regular gloves. After the surface is vacuum sealed, the latex gloves should be removed or disposed of before coming in contact with other parts of the packaging to avoid contaminating it with trace amounts of substance. Hairnet and long sleeve clothing should be worn during all stages of packaging to prevent hairs from entering the package. Remember I told you about that Thomas Sweat, the serial arsonist in Washington, D.C. You know, he carried a milk jug with gas in a plastic shopping bag. And one of his head hairs was in the bag. So, they say we lose like 80 hairs a day. You know? Okay. Plastic painter suits can be worn to prevent clothing fiber from contaminating the package. Packages should not be sent from inside post offices, but from random drop boxes away from cameras and buildings with cameras. That's very smart. Some care should nonetheless be taken to disguise facial features and identifying marks. Yeah, nondescript, uncharacteristic clothing. And you change some things about you. Keep in mind that the total weight of the package sent via one of the drop boxes, at least in the United States, is 13 ounces or less. Right. The closer to a standard envelope your package looks, the less likely it is to be intercepted. Security tips for recipients. The best option for recipients is to use post office boxes or PMBs. I don't know what a PMB is. Obtained with fake identification. Mom and pop box companies often have poor security compared to franchises. For example, they are less likely to require photocopies of their ID and also are less likely to have a camera system. Or if they do have a camera system, it'll probably be very poor as compared to the big franchise company. Recipients using P.O. boxes should wait for a lengthy yet random period of time before entering. God damn it, I hate when I do that. My brain works too fast in my goddamn mouth. The recipients using post office boxes should wait for a lengthy yet random period of time after the package arrives to attempt retrieval. This waiting period dramatically decreases the chance of being apprehended, as prolonged surveillance is very expensive. Don't forget that most color printers encoded microscopic yellow dots into the paper that it's printed on. The yellow dots are arranged in a way that is unique to each printer. See, how did I get on the fucking printer shit? It's the opposite of this page on packaging. Oh, it's a security tip for recipients. Okay, the best option is for post office boxes or PMBs. Try to get a fake ID to obtain these. The mom and pop franchise are best to work with because of lack of security. Alright, then I flip the page over and then we're talking about yellow dots on paper. What the hell is this? Don't forget that most color printers encode microscopic yellow dots into the paper that is being printed on. The yellow dots are arranged in a way that is unique to each printer. They reveal the model and serial number of the printer they are printed on. This makes it quite easy for someone to positively connect a printer to a certain printed document. This is done at the request of the Secret Service and link counterfeit money to a particular printer. Printer manufacturers do not deny this. Extensive information on this subject is available from the Electronic Fronter Foundation. Electronic Fronter Foundation? And that's at www.eff.org/issues/printers. We should have been a little bit more, I don't know. Got to be some kind, I guess the other side of this page belongs to something else. I don't know what's going on with your printer thing, Metzger. See, we're not an expensive operation, you guys. We have way too many things on our hands, so we don't have a staff. And all right, thank you for reading the fifth edition of Paranoid Newsletter. Visit resist.com to buy future and archived editions. Sure, you can trust the government. Just ask an Indian. We work with a separate organization that allows us to maintain our privacy and act as a cashier for sales and donations. Please refer to the Paranoid Newsletter and all your correspondence. Not on the outside of the envelope. Otherwise, the staff will confuse your correspondence with another newsletter. Send email to tm_metzger@yahoo.com. Note the, has the, like when the quote, like if you're writing something, you quote something someone else says, you know, you put those two hook things on each side of the quotes. It says note, whatever that's called, the quotation indicators, character is not a space. Or send us snail mail with your donation request for additional newsletters to Tom Metzger, P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And it has a cartoon on, at the bottom, and it said, he's more dangerous. It said, he's more dangerous than all the kikes and coons in the world combined. He's the scummiest creature that has ever drew a breath. He's a white race traitor, and there's more of him than you might think. And the picture of a guy telling the police officer, yeah, and the guy, this snitch, this white guy saying, I don't know if he's the guy but you're looking for, but my neighbor once said some bad stuff about black people. And the cop is holding this newspaper and it says, hate crime suspect still at large. Huh. Very funny. All right, very funny. All right, what I'm about to read here may be out of order. I'm just going to put it out there and you guys do the best you can with it. All right? This is about, what's the top paragraph say? Enforce compliance. Here's how resistance movements enforce compliance with the counterintelligence functions. If a trusted cell member brings an outsider into your group or reveals sensitive information to an outsider without performing any of these counter intelligence measures, then that cell member must be severely disciplined. Depending on your situation, simply ostracizing the individual may suffice. Punishment ranges from revoking his membership to revoking his birth certificate. Now, that must be the tail end of something else. So what? I don't know. I know it sounds like I'm unprepared, but it kind of pisses me off. I thought this was in order. Let's just read this on how to set up a dead letterbox. Traditionally, deep cover agents pass messages, documents, money, weapons, and other material between each other without compromising their security using dead letterboxes. Neither agent knows the identity of the other, nor do the authorities know what's going on. The method described in this article has been used by foreign intelligence agencies and underground groups to thwart counterintelligence and counter-espionage sections of the FBI. A dead letter box, British English, is also called a dead drop in American English. A dead drop is a physical location where material is covertly placed for another person to collect without direct contact between the parties. Good locations for dead drops are nooks and crannies in public buildings, niches in brick walls, in and around public trash receptacles, in and around trees and shrubs, a third party's mailbox, between books in a public library or inside of a book, a specific book, maybe with a page number. Inside paper towel dispensers of restaurant washrooms and so on. The key to success is ingenuity. If the item being passed can be disguised as a discarded candy wrapper or hidden inside a cigarette butt, etc., so much the better. Dead drop protocol. The method described in this article was originally devised and perfected by the KGB for use in Britain and the United States during the Cold War. But the technique is so effective, it's still in use today. And it is used by more than 30 intelligence agencies and underground groups worldwide. When used by two people who have basic skills in counter-surveillance, this method will confound an FBI surveillance team, as demonstrated by the FBI's inept handling of the case involving Aldrich Ames, Jonathan Pollard, and John Walker Jr. Tradecraft. You need to know three pieces of tradecraft to make this technique work. Pick a good site for your dead drop. This means choosing a spot where you're momentarily hidden from view while you pass by, and either load or empty the box. I mean, you either go in there to load it to give a message, or you go in there to retrieve a message. It also means selecting a site that is easily accessible and in a public location. That's trick number one. Trick two is use a separate set of sites to signal to your opposite number that you're ready to place something in the dead drop or retrieve something from the dead drop. Trick three, use a foolproof signal that tells both parties that the material in the site has been picked up. This guarantees that the first agent can go back and recover the items if the second agent is unable to make the pickup for some reason. Alright. Step one, give the ready-to-fill signal. Let's suppose that you need to deliver a document to your contact. The first thing you do is transmit a ready-to-fill signal. You need to tell your contact that you're ready to put something in the box. For example, you might place a piece of chewing gum on a lamp post at a prearranged location at a prearranged time. I've also heard of a slash of spray paint on a certain side of a building, a bumper sticker, not anything racial, but you know, just a bumper sticker around a certain telephone pole at an intersection. This trick is in using signals that can be easily seen by a lot of people. This means that your contact does not have to compromise his or her security while reading your signal. The ready to pick up signal, step number two. When your contact sees a ready to fill signal, he or she will send a ready to pick up signal. Again, this signal must be sent at a prearranged time and location, say at 2 p.m. It might be a chalk mark on a traffic signpost or back of a park bench. When you see the ready to pick up acknowledgement, you must fill the dead drop within 15 minutes, i.e. by 2:15. After placing your materials in the dead drop, you immediately return and remove your ready to fill signal, thereby indicating to your contact that the box is filled. Man, all this stuff is pretty damn smart. I would definitely purchase the, I guess it was the, well, I don't even know what Paranoid Newsletters came from. I think it was the fifth one. Step three, the all clear signal. Upon seeing that your ready to fill signal has been removed, your contact goes to the dead drop to retrieve the material that you placed in there for them. This must be accomplished before a prearranged deadline, say 2:30. Your contact then returns and removes his ready to pick up signal, indicating that the box has been emptied. Let's see, ready to pick, wait, what did that say? Your contact returns and removes his ready to pick up signal. That means he's got it in his hand. That could be taking a bumper sticker off the sign, maybe putting a black magic marker through it. Who knows? When you see this all clear signal, you leave the area. However, if you do not see the signal by the prearranged time, you return to the dead drop to retrieve the material in order to prevent it from falling into unauthorized hands. This system of signals can be made even more secure by using positive acknowledgement signals instead of simply removing existing signals, of course. Providing security for your dead drop. To maintain watertight security for your dead drop, simply weave a number of fake dead drop locations into your routine on a daily, weekly, and monthly basis. Narrow passageways between buildings, covered pathways in public parks, near dumpsters, behind restaurants, all of these are ideal. Simply make a point to walk past these fake dead drops on a regular basis. Remember, each dead drop is located such that you'll be momentarily hidden from view as you pass it. If you're under surveillance, the goons will go ballistic. They'll need to place an agent at each suspected dead drop at a precise moment you walk by. And that may be a problem, getting manpower to cover that. If you've chosen your sites carefully, there's no other way for the goons to monitor these locations. If you have three or four fake dead drops that you regularly walk past, you'll soon notice that the tall tale pattern of strangers who just happen to be loitering nearby at the instant you're momentarily hidden from view. Momentarily hidden from general view. When this happens, you've detected the presence of a surveillance team. Suspend your covert activities until the surveillance passes. Survival tip. Even if you're not using dead drops, it's a good idea to walk past fake dead drops as a part of your weekly routine. I've caught more FBI gumshoes than I can count with this one simple counter-surveillance technique. To date, the FBI trainers have been unable to develop a defense against this particular counter-surveillance maneuver, and you just haven't lived until you have seen the facial expression on an FBI spook who suddenly realizes he's been burned by the target of a surveillance operation. Yeah, I bet that is pretty cool. That's interesting. All right, what do we got here? Let me go back to the U.S. Postal Service here. Sorry for jumping around like this, but there's no page numbers on this, and the pages are out of order. All right, let me just read it. Controlled delivery. To bust recipients of intercepted drug mail, customs officials will often dress as postmen and make an arrest after the suspect accepts the package. Oftentimes, they will allow a few minutes to pass in hopes that the suspect will have opened the package and then raid the premises. This happens almost always in the case of non-pharmaceutical illegal drug interceptions and oftentimes with scheduled opiate prescriptions. The love letter. Sometimes if you are getting very small amounts of drugs, especially lowly scheduled drugs and pharmaceuticals, you will only get a letter from customs telling you to knock it off. They will almost certainly keep your address in a database. So once you get a love letter, make sure you never use that address again. A sample of this letter has been attached as Appendix A. I don't know where Appendix A is. Surveillance. You can expect that if you get one package seized, that other incoming packages are likely to be seized as well. So try and only have one incoming package per box at a time. Also, it is quite likely return address networks can be formed, especially with fast shipping methods. So never send mail from a box that has a tie to you unless you get the box just for that purpose. I guess with a fake ID, right? Also, very frequently change the return address so you use the stop network analysis from being done. I'm getting frustrated here. I mean, I appreciate the guy typing up these newsletters. I don't know if he's a foreigner or whatever. Maybe English is his second language. Look how this reads here. Also, very frequently change the return address you use to stop network analysis from being done. Okay, now that I put it up to the light, now I can see it better. Okay. Packaging tips for senders. Use a real return address, but make sure it has no connection to you. Make sure the zip code is used the same in the dead box that you plan to be sending packages from. Remember, that's that abandoned house that doesn't look abandoned. A generally sound practice is to use the legitimate address of an apartment complex, but do not specify an actual number. The name used should be generic, but not overly common. Keep the front of the package as clean as possible. It should have no markings other than a shipping and a return address. Double check to make sure all information is correct. Also, ensure that all words are spelled correctly. Both addresses should be typed and printed, not handwritten. Ensure the printer used has minimal connection to you. Paid for in cash from a friend, not used for other things. Ensure the printer has used has minimal connection to you. Wouldn't the Kinko's or something like that? Or maybe not. Maybe they have secret hidden insignia on their paper. I don't know. I don't know what he means by that. Ensure the printer used has minimal connection to you. I understand that. But in parentheses, it says paid for in cash from a friend or for use for other things. Or not used for other things. I don't quite get that. It is easy for renters to link print to the printer it came from. You may want to use a very cheap printer and dispose of it and get a new one on a semi-regular basis, perhaps four times a year. Exact postage should be applied neatly to the package. Do not seal the package with tape. Use self-adhesive envelopes and stamps. All right. Now, on the flip side of this page, it's talking about this thing that's used to detect stuff. And it says, the trace of controlled substances on the filter are heated to vapors and ionized. The time required for the ions to drip through the electrical field is measured, and the substances are identified by the drift time through the electronic field. Below is a picture of an electronic drug detector. These devices can be used to identify many substances. Arson investigators use a similar device to detect accelerants such as gasoline when investigating fires. All right, substance identification. Field agents may test a small sample of an intercepted package to determine if it's likely being used for illegal drugs. Or perhaps confirm it is not. What it is documented as. They will likely use traditional reagent tests. Reagent test, such as Marquise, to accomplish this. A positive result on a reagent test does not absolutely verify what a substance is, but is likely probable cause for a search warrant, as it will take some time to get a substance GC/MS tested, and they are not going to want to tip off a suspect with undue delays. All right, I'm going to jump ahead here. Evidence gathering methods, okay, fingerprinting the outside and inside of the package. Handwriting analysis, analyzing paper and ink, analyzing type impressions. Okay, forensic analysis of trace evidence, adhesives, fibers, hairs, paint, paper, plastic, rubber, stamp, etc. Post office surveillance of individuals suspected of sending or receiving drug mail or racialist mail. There are reports of tracking devices being hidden inside intercept packages when they are being sent to a safe location, such as a fraudulent obtained P.O. box. The tracking device then follows the recipient back to their base location where an arrest is made. There are reports of people being raided after checking. There are reports of people being raided after checking tracking of illegal packages online without using anonymous proxy servers. Always use an anonymity service when checking your shipping details. Whatever. I'm a little bit pissed off. Alright. I think that's it for now. That's it for that. I'm getting frustrated on this because I can't make heads or tails of what sheep belongs where. You know what I think of that? Just like that. There you go. Now it's in quarters. Now it's in eighths. Let's do sixteenths here. Well, the paper's getting thicker. I can't rip it. Anyways, I'm going to move on to War of the Flea. That won't frustrate me. Right. How much tape do I have left? I have some left. Okay, haven't given a warning. In fact, a general grievance here. Haven't given a warning. The EOKA proceeded with a series of raids on police stations that served a twofold purpose. The attacks frightened the police and also gave the organization the means of getting badly needed arms, since few were arriving from Greece, where the first weapons and supplies have been obtained. The campaign in the towns lagged, a fact Grivas explains almost apologetically, was due to the total inexperience of the execution groups. Results were nevertheless obtained. Several policemen were killed and others wounded in Nicosia and Famagusta. Scores resigned and others, and those who remained, says Grivas, scarcely showed their face outside their stations. The effect of the raids was to throw the administration entirely on the defensive. Armed sentries walked around and around the police stations at night. And when the people had to close the station temporarily, they took all the weapons with them. The British knew next to nothing about EOKA, who its members were, where they might have, or where they might be found. Those who might have been able to tell them, the Greek Cypriot members of the police force, were soon silenced. Wow, this guy did not play, did he? On August 28th, a constable of the special branch, who had been marked for death because of his too zealous application to duty, was posted at a political meeting in Ledra Street, in Nicosia. He was shot down before a crowd of hundreds by a young government clerk, Michael Cariolis, a member of a three-man EOKA execution squad. The killing in broad daylight before hundreds of people in the heart of the capital was a fatal blow to police morale. The killer, Cariolis, was later caught and sentenced to death, but his work had been done. The slaying of the special branch man, says Griva, shattered opposition to EOKA among the Greek police. Increasingly, Turks were recruited to replace Greeks on the police force, intensifying the hostility between the two ethnic communities. Of the Greeks who remained on the British payroll, many became spies for EOKA, accurately informing the organization of British intentions from day to day. Those who were not so employed closed their eyes to EOKA activities, as Grievous had predicted, and ceased to be effective service to the British or a hindrance to the libertarian movement. You know, on that recorded message about the fertility plight in Europe, the fertility of Greece, I think, was 1.3. And they say there's now more mosques in a certain part of Greece than there are churches. And now I see who's who it is that's destroying the Greek society. It's got to be the Turks. Turks said we can't beat them in armed combat. You know, the Greeks were a little bit too fanatical, I guess. Turks were never good fighters. Never. When they kicked ass, when the Ottoman Empire first kicked off, the army that kicked the ass for them were the Janissaries. They were the white-skinned Balkans who grew up being trained to be a Turk, basically. You know, they were captured after the war or whatever. British propaganda was bitter in its denunciation of the methods used by the EOKA. But Grivas was not concerned, as he later wrote, "All war is cruel, and the only way to win against superior force is by ruse and trickery. You can no more afford to make a difference between striking in the front or striking from behind than you can between employing rifles and howitzers. The British may criticize me as much as they like for making war in Cyprus, but I am not obliged to ask their permission to do so. Nor can they now deny that I made it in the most successful way." You know, we don't have to ask Zog's permission to form a resistance. And we shouldn't care what they think about us. When they do documentaries about certain subjects that deal with the white struggle, you know, we're called racist and cowards and this and that. And we shouldn't let that get to us. All we need to do is go out there and just take it to their ass. Terrorism was supported by intensive political agitation that brought about huge crowds in the principal towns. During one demonstration in Nicosia in September, army trucks were overturned and set afire, and the British Institute was burned to the ground. The headlines generated by this activity failed to win Greece a hearing in the Cyprus question in the United Nations. Turning the page. The Greek appeal was rejected on September 23rd, but the EOKA campaign had shaken the British. 2 days after the UN rejection, it was announced in London that a new governor would replace Sir Robert Armitage immediately. The replacement was the much-decorated Field Marshal Sir John Harding, an outstanding British general of World War II who had just relinquished the post of Chief of the Imperial General Staff. He was, in fact, writes Grievous, the leading British soldier of his day, and no higher compliment could have been paid to us than to send against our tiny forces a man with so great a reputation and so brilliant a career. Very interesting. I think I'll stop right there. We'll pick that up on another show. Yeah, I know I'm reading a lot of this stuff word for word in War of the Flea, but I think it's good. I think it's good that we do this. You guys hear that? That's the handle to my tape recorder. Whenever I tilt it, it goes back and forth. And I need to hold it in my hand at the end of the tape because I need to see exactly when the tape runs out. But I think General Grivas is someone that we can emulate, even respect, maybe even look up to. You know, he's pro-Greek. He wasn't a sellout to his race. In fact, the communists in Greece hated him. And there was a communist struggle in Greece too, but General Grivas was too much of a badass for them. So we must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children that is only done through racial holy war. Now you need to set the bounds of your own racial holy war. Most people can't do what they're just not hardwired to do, to be able to do. But we need to do stuff that's outside the box. I told you I have a show. I think the show I did yesterday, when you hear it, I don't know, about a guy in the INSF, the Illinois National Socialist Front. Him and a friend got beat up. This guy, Phil Anderson, I've known him for a while. He's an all-around good guy. But he really caused a lot of havoc in Peoria, Illinois, a year ago or so, where he
put like racial flyers inside Easter eggs, and these Easter eggs got infiltrated into this massive Easter egg hunt for the kids. And so here all these families are with their kids in this park doing these Easter egg hunt, and these kids are opening up their racist flyers. And the FBI heard about that, and I guess they started harassing Phil. But I mean, that was, you know, that was agitation. We need to be about street agitation as well as trying to wake people up. White people don't want to be waking up no more. So now it's time to agitate. So we must secure the existence of our people in the future for white children. Carpe noctem, seize the night. Starve the sheep inside you and feed the wolf. And make Shield Wall and Wolfheart your mental makeup.
Well, this is a little bit like getting the cart before the horse. I should have put this on at the beginning. Yeah, it is August the 23rd, 2014, Saturn's Day. And this is a slot we've left open for Sling Blade. He wasn't able to get one of his new shows over here. I asked him on Tuesday, but anyhow, he got. We've got this, a lot of these old shows, but now the phone numbers are not good, and some of the information may be out of date, so don't get excited about that. And this is White Aryan Resistance Revived. Yeah. Recreated right here in North Central Indiana, P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. We're right here at Terrible Tommy's Tavern. Yeah, Terrible Tommy's Tavern and Steakhouse. And that's right behind our filling station where we still sell Ethel and regular out here. Yeah. Give you a cut break, too. Yeah. And we've got the Weapons of Mass Destruction Used Equipment Yard right behind us here. We got a lot of stuff in here. Boy, there's so much war going on over the world, it's easy to pick up almost brand new equipment for almost nothing, man. So we get on over here during the summer and buy yourself a tank or something. And we'll give you a free paint job with every unit. You can... if a lady wants a pink one, we'll give her a pink one. That's right. So anyhow, we've got a whole bunch of shows that we may have done at one time, and I'm not sure, from Sling Blade. We got them in a box over here, and whenever Sling Blade's not available, we'll just throw one in. There's a lot of good information on there, but if you run into something that's time-sensitive and it's not applicable anymore, well... don't bitch to me. And if you disagree with Sling Blade on something, just send me a comment and I'll give it to him. And he'll give you hell, too. I mean, take you to the woodshed. And that goes for me, too. We got thick skins here. We can take almost anything. We sure can. And usually do. Well, we'll be back on Monday to see whether we can offend you some more. I feel between Sling Blade and I, we ought to be able to offend you at least once a day. And if you feel left out and you're not offended enough, let me know and I'll send a special offensive thing out to you, man. Yeah. So that's it for today. We'll be back with you, like I say, on Moon's Day. And 14-5. And remember, we are racial separatists. That's it. No in between. No mixing of the races. It's bad for both races. It never works out. It may seem like it, but they've spent billions of dollars trying to cram us together into one brown race, and it hasn't been accomplished so far. They made some headway, but not near enough. There are too many of us white boys left. They're going to have to work a lot harder. So 14-5, and we'll see you Moon's Day.
Bring a drink of water, Leroy. Bring a drink of water, no. If I could get to the Mercy Man, he'd give me some, I know. I got a gal in Vicksburg, Bertha is her name. Lord, I wish I was tied to Bertha instead of this ball and chain. I'm going to Memphis. Mm-hmm. I'm going to Memphis. But like a bitter weed, I'm a bad seed. But when the levee's through, and I am too, let the honky-tonk roll on. Come morning, I'll be gone. I'm going to Memphis. Well, I've never been to Chicago, but it must be a mighty fine place. I couldn't get past Tennessee with Mississippi all over my face. I'm going to Memphis. I'm going to Memphis. Just like a bitter weed, I'm a bad seed. But when the levee's through, and I am too, let the honky-tonk roll on. Come morning, I'll be gone. I'm going to Memphis. Well, it brought me a little water in a Mr. Prince Albert can, but the boss man caught me drinking it, and I believe he broke my hand. Another boy is down, the shovel burned him out. Let me stand on his body to see what the shouting's about. I'm going to Memphis. I'm going to Memphis. Like a bitter weed, I'm a bad seed. But when the levee's through, and I am too, let the honky-tonk roll on. Come morning, I'll be gone. I'm going to Memphis. Yeah, Memphis bound. I'm going to Memphis.
This train. Ride this train with me to Pine Ridge, Mississippi. You see that levee over there? It's built to hold back the floodwaters of Old Man River when he gets on a rampage. And sometimes he gets on a rampage, believe me. You know how that levee was built, mister? It was not built with machines. It was built with elbow grease, muscle, and blood. And the toughest, dirtiest work was done with that line of men over there. You see them? The ones with the chains on their legs, the numbers on their back, and the hope gone out of their faces. They rounded them up out of the jails, the alleys, the honky-tonks on a Saturday night. I was one of them. I don't hardly know how it happened to me. It happened so fast. I just remember I was in the Green Lantern in Natchez one Saturday night. Somebody pulled a knife. Somebody threw a bottle. And the next thing I knew, I had irons on my legs and a shovel in my hand. Lord, have mercy. It seemed like the whole world come down on me. But if you complained about something, the boss man would just laugh in your face and give you a little taste of old Black Betty. Old Black Betty's a 6-foot rawhide whip that he carries on his saddle horn, and it'll cut the blood out of you.